If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the James Bond A to Z podcast. We are back for another festive edition, another podcast. My name is Tom Butler, and joining me in the traitors, it's two of the big dogs. It's my 100% hundy. It's Tom Wheatley.
Yeah, hello.
And I've got my suspicions about this other one. It's Brendan Duffy.
Hello.
It's a traitor skit. You like that?
Yeah.
If it's still relevant when this comes out.
Slightly complicated, but yeah.
So this is another festive edition of the James Bond A to Z podcast. We've been very quiet this year. I think we put out one bonus episode for when Amazon officially took over. Mm-hmm. So we thought we'd reconvene, talk about the year in James Bond. We will have a look back at what's happened throughout the year. And at the end, we will talk about Bond 26, all the new developments that have happened this year. I know everyone's been waiting with bated breath for us to proclaim, but I think we've had a lot of time to think about it, and yeah, we can talk about that.
Yeah, everyone needs to know where we're at, what information we've got.
Which is very little.
Yeah.
So, but we're back together in the same room. It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Very nice. When was the last time you saw each other?
This time last year when we recorded the episode.
Blimey. Yeah. Right, okay. Yeah.
Because we did the other one virtually, and I saw you last year for Goldfinger.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just never got our asses together. No. I mean, I've seen you.
Unbond related.
Yeah, unbond related.
But this podcast is the glue that's holding us together.
Mm. It is, yeah. That's depressing, isn't it?
But yeah, this is our festive special. We will also be back for a New Year special as well. So that's another, yeah, bite of the James Bond Later podcast for you to enjoy over Christmas, if you can finish it.
Oh, people are getting very, very excited now. Get it in the calendar.
All right, then. Well, let's first off start with a look back over the year in James Bond and, yeah, discuss some of the things that have happened this year. When we talk about James Bond, we're talking about the movies, books, soundtracks, all sorts of various different pieces. There was lots of stuff that happened since we last recorded the Christmas special. One thing I wanted to note was that the tail end of last year, in fact, I'll move on to that. Oh, actually, the very last part of the year, they released From Roger Moore with Love, which was a Roger Moore documentary.
Christmas Day, was it? I think so, yeah.
Did you watch that?
I did watch that, yeah.
What did you think?
It was an enjoyable, warm, interesting, but not particularly in-depth look at Roger Moore, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it added anything new that we did, especially us. It didn't add anything we didn't know, but it was nice to see it.
I think there was some, I mean, Roger Moore, I read an interesting article about it, and they were saying that it's Roger Moore's, people obviously like him, but all the things that happened in his life didn't really change him. He was always Roger Moore. So every bit you're like, oh, Roger Moore did that, Roger Moore did that. So the story behind his life is, you know, it's not like there's an amazing thing that happened to him and it changed him. It's more like, oh, he's a lovely man to watch doing that. But I think some of the interesting things were like the letters that they had that they sent to his like wives, which you probably didn't know about. Like the way that he spoke to them was quite interesting. But other than that, just a nice, warm, family-friendly thing to watch about Roger.
Just the perfect thing for Christmas, wasn't it? It was, very, very heartwarming. And like I say, yeah, I don't think we learned too much new about him, but I did like all the family home videos and all that sort of stuff. I thought that was really, really nice to see. There was no skeletons in the closet. There was some, weird stuff around his first wife, which I think was kind of... interesting to learn about.
Steve Coogan impression?
But the Steve Coogan impression, yeah. Mm. I mean, nowadays, that would have been AI.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I mean, I wonder if Roger's family have sold the rights to his voice or whether it's too late now. I don't know.
I'm not sure. I think if you look at maybe people like Robert De Niro or Al Pacino, so if their voice is probably going to be useful for quite a long time, I'm not sure Roger Moore's voice is going to be that useful in the next few years.
Do you think he's fading into history now?
I, you know, if you look at a lot of the big stars, they've probably got films like The Godfather and things like that. They're going to last a very long time. I don't think North Sea Hijack is going to probably stand the test of time for the next generation.
Or A View to a Kill.
Or definitely A View to a Kill. Yeah.
He did those, was it Tesco adverts, Christmas adverts? I feel like he'd be ripe for a Christmas advert, surely his voice in an approximation of that. But I wonder whether now, I mean, I don't know how this works, but we were talking about this the other day about how, who was it, Michael Caine and Matthew McConaughey were doing deals to sell their voice likenesses for future.
Yeah, I think there's something that's, I think a lot of actors are going to sell their voices, mainly retired ones, because it essentially means a pretty impressive income coming from doing nothing. But there's got to be a pretty big shift to make people understand that. Because if you watched an advert tomorrow and there was a voice of a deceased actor on, you'd be like, what's going on here? I think it's going to be another 2 or 3 years until everyone goes, yeah, that's normal now. You just hear the voices of deceased actors all the time.
Yeah. It just makes me think about those, I don't know what advert it's for, but with Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, for the energy.
Yeah. I mean, he's haunting. Whatever they've done to that guy who plays Albert Einstein, if you're in another country, then, yeah, I would Google this and look for these Albert. Is it British Gas? No.
I think it is British Gas, I think.
Mm. Yeah. And there's an actor playing Albert Einstein, but I just wonder who that's aimed at. Like, who's going?
Who's sitting there with the provider going, I need to change, but I'm not sure who. The Einstein brand.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he looks doesn't look like him.
No.
He doesn't act like him.
No.
Doesn't sound like him.
No.
It's just a close approximation of what Albert Einstein.
And there are photos of Einstein that exist. Like, this is not, it's not Shakespeare.
No.
We know what he looked like.
I just wonder, did they license that? Is that a deal they've done with the Einstein?
It must be. You can't just do it without.
But they must have gone, making him look like an idiot.
Yeah, he does look like a fool.
I just don't understand that.
Well, anyway. There's got to be a point. It's got to be like, things fall out of trademark and stuff. I mean, you could go back and do people from history, couldn't you? And then you'd be fine. Well, how far do you go back until you go, actually, you can do what you like with now?
Yeah,
it's public domain, I guess. But like, yeah, Albert Einstein, I always think that's a bit of a weird one. Of all the people you could bring back to sell electricity.
I wonder if that'll happen with AI voices. If we get to a point where the AI voice falls out of copyright and then everybody can just use any voice, in like 50 years' time.
Yeah.
But that everyone's using Roger Moore's voice in 50 years' time.
This podcast could be just three Roger Moores.
Yeah.
That would be incredible. Mm. For one or two episodes. confusing as well.
I was going to say...
I agree as well.
I was going to say it could be different Roger Moore characters talking to each other, but they would all sound the same.
Yeah.
So, no disrespect to Sir Roger, RIP. But that was a great documentary. And I think it's probably still available on iPlayer. I don't know.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Yeah, I checked earlier.
Maybe that happened. Okay. So that was very early, in fact, late last year, but post the time we'd recorded the last podcast. That was great. Then very early in the year, we had news of the Amazon takeover. I think it was in February. And we recorded a whole episode about this. So the news came out that the Eon Productions, Barbara and Michael, had sold the creative control of the James Bond film series to Amazon MGM. And it sort of threw everything up in the air. So it was the end of the creative control of the Broccoli family over James Bond. So, like, whether you think that's a good move or a bad move, it meant that things would be able to move forward on Bond 26. Because I think when we recorded this last year, we just had there didn't seem to be a huge amount of hope for how they could move forward with it.
Yeah.
So in hindsight, like, how do you feel about that decision?
I'm still up in the air until we see what happens with the next Bond film. I think I'm sort of hopeful at the moment from the rumblings that I've heard about, the planning and everything. Nothing concrete, obviously, yet. But, we know a bit about who's involved in the thing now. It feels a bit hopeful for me, more so than I probably would have said a year ago. Anything could happen a year ago. It seems like they want to make a good film.
And the good thing is, as well, they've not just acquired the rights and gone, bang, this is what it's going to be. They're piecing it together.
Yeah. Yes.
In a way that feels right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They could have quite easily have already put out two seasons of something by now. It would have been very easy to quickly jump on the fact that they had the IP, but they're not doing that.
No, they are taking their time with it and... they've obviously, I mean, these things take a long time to come through the pipeline as well. Amazon MGM would have had its pipeline of things to work on. This is clearly the crown in their jewel for the future. It's the biggest IP that they own. I think that now the dust has settled, I think everyone can, yeah, we can now just start looking forward to the next Bond. We'll talk more about Bond 26 and some of the decisions they've made so far at the end of this episode. But I mean, it was a big shock at the time.
It was.
Big shock. Yeah. Because I think if you've listened to all however many episodes we did of the podcast, the prism through everything, all the James Bond decisions that were made were through either Cubby Broccoli, Barbara Broccoli, or Michael G. Wilson, pretty much. And now we're in an era where that is no longer the case. So James Bond is in limbo, and is that's a blank slate for them to work with, which ultimately, if you want a new James Bond film, that's the best place to start from. You're not painted into a corner of we've got to do this, and this. Or, you know, like they were with Spectre, it's, oh, we've got to get Blofeld in this movie. Like, they don't have those pressures facing them, and they don't have to, they take the time and do what they want.
The risk is that, and I think with a lot of streaming things, when these IPs get taken on, they are careful with it to begin with, because you have to start these things right. If you start it wrong, you're setting yourself up for failure long term. You've got to start it right so that then you can continue it and turn it into a franchise and stuff. So the risk, I think the first entry will be good, and then I'm worried that as soon as the money starts coming in, that then they'll go, now we can, you know, create three spin-offs from it, because we've done the hard work to set it off.
Yeah.
That's the risk.
I mean, I think the other big risk is we're now entering the fifth year without a Bond film.
Yep.
Where's the audience going to come from? Because the younger audience are going to, it's going to lose their relevance. They're connected with Daniel Craig. He's gone.
It might become a sort of thing that is focused on the older demographic, like the Thursday Murder Club or something like that, where you're going. We know who the audience is for this. It is the older people.
I have a theory around this, and we'll talk about this some more when we talk about some of the decisions that we've made around it. And so I'll keep my powder dry on that one. But I think that is the big risk that they have at the moment, is the longer they leave it. But we know when they left it so long after License to Kill and GoldenEye, the same questions were being asked. Is Bond still relevant? Do people still care? And ultimately, the truth is that I think people do care.
Yeah.
And it's such a ubiquitous brand that it's almost like the royal family. It's like, it doesn't really matter what the royal family do. As long as it's there, people are like interested in the story. It's like,
the marketing engine that will be behind it will be phenomenal. So if they do it in a way, I mean, you look at, we'll talk about First Light and what we know about that in a bit, but they are focused on a younger audience. They know they've got to get a younger audience.
Yeah.
So I think that'll play massively into how they market it as well. I don't think, it'd be unlikely if they said, we're going to do the same thing we've always done. Because GoldenEye is probably the last time I can remember it being very young focused. I don't think Casino Royale was particularly focused on the younger audience. I think it was just more of a general one. Whereas I remember GoldenEye, a lot of kids wanting to watch that.
Yeah. And Tomorrow Never Dies is like a video game.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Whereas the newer ones are more gritty and stuff. And I can't imagine many young people really being that excited about Casino Royale.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely more of a PG-13 type play, isn't it? The early teenagers rather than the young ones. But we live in a different age now. I don't think kids are sitting down on a Sunday watching Thunderball like we used to, because the monoculture just doesn't exist in that way anymore. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think the biggest question mark over it is like the Amazon factor and how they seek to exploit the brand. They'll get that first thing off the ground, but if they see it, like if there's a whiff of money to be made from it, then it'll be full steam ahead.
I don't think the existence of all the older films is actually going to be a big player, because even if you get a new audience in and you successfully market and create a new franchise based on that, I don't think young people are going to go, great, I enjoyed that, now I'm going to go back and watch Thunderball. They'll be like, ignore all that stuff. Same way as, you know, the new Sherlock show that came out a few years ago, everyone watched that. They didn't go back and watch old Sherlock movies and old Sherlock films. Yeah.
And Jurassic World, are people going back watching Jurassic Park, or are they just treating it as...
Well, probably, because that's good, isn't it? That's still better CGI than in Jurassic World.
But I think you're right. I think there's probably a whole generation of kids who only know Jurassic World.
Yeah.
And that's a totally different type of movie to Jurassic Park. Like, Jurassic Park is the gold standard for me, but like, I watched that last Jurassic World movie was not for me. It was absolute garbage from start to finish, but it had enough dinosaurs and action sequences to stick on a lunchbox and for kids to go, it's got dinosaurs in it. That's all they need.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, let's move on from Amazon. We will return to Bond 26 in a minute. Oscars. At the Oscars at the start of the year, March maybe, we had a James Bond tribute. Did you watch this?
I didn't watch it at the time. I watched it earlier today because if I were looking through the notes for this, I was like, was there? I didn't remember that. And then I watched it and I was like, okay, yeah. But pretty much what I expected.
It was very strange. But there was some interesting stuff. It was Halle Berry introduced it. And I think it was to do with Barbara and Michael having got their Irving G. Thalberg Award. And so I think it was linked to that and also honouring the legacy. And obviously it was a big talking point at that time in Hollywood. It's very strange. I mean, it had Margaret Qualley, who obviously was she Oscar nominated for The Substance? She was definitely like in an Oscar nominated film, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Then you had Lisa from Blackpink, who was also in White Lotus at the time.
Mm.
Doja Cat. And then Ray, who's a British singer, who would probably do a great job at doing that. I mean, all of them looked the part.
Yeah.
It's just a very strange...
It's just a bit of fluff, wasn't it? There's not really any... We need to do something about Bond. Can you do a couple of songs and a dance? Yeah, cheers, no worries.
I mean, Daniel Craig was probably available. Why didn't he do the song and dance?
That would have made a big difference if you'd got somebody... I mean, Halle Berry is probably not the person I would associate with Bond out of a long list of people that would be better on stage to talk about it. I think she was fine. She didn't seem that bothered about it. She's not a massive part of the Bond legacy, is she? She's a very
probably still hoping for the Jinx spin-off.
Could be.
No, Amazon are.
Yeah.
Sure. I think we all are.
Jinx Junior would be now, wouldn't it? There'd be Jinx and there'd be Jinx Junior.
Well, if they ever got Pierce Brosnan back, they might get Jinx back.
Yeah.
Well, talking of Pierce Brosnan, he's the next note on my list here. Pierce Brosnan was big this year.
He's back, isn't he? He's never really gone away.
But at the start of this year, he just an interest just surged in him because he did. There was a couple of things. Mainly, it was Mobland, which was the TV show that he was in on Amazon Prime, which also starred Tom Hardy, Paddy Considine, Helen Mirren. It was a big deal.
Yeah.
Did anyone watch it?
No,
I watched one episode, and the accents were unbearable.
Oh, as an Irishman,
an Irishman doing an Irish accent.
Was the same with Thursday Murder Club. He's doing a bit of a caricature Irish accent in that, isn't he?
He's doing Cockney in that one.
Is he?
Yeah.
I thought, no.
Yeah.
He's playing
He's a unionist.
Yeah, you are.
But
still caricature.
Is abysmal.
Yeah.
But
as you're an Irish, you've got Irish heritage.
Irish family.
So you are very familiar with the voices and the accents and that stuff. So, where was it landing?
It was landing. It was as though somebody who'd never been to Ireland was doing an Irish accent.
Right, okay.
But he's from Ireland. It's baffling.
Yeah, I know when he talked about it at the time, he said that he was told, or his idea was it was an Irishman who'd lived in London for most of his life. And so it was kind of...
But that's essentially him. He's an Irishman who's moved out of Ireland.
Just talk.
Yeah. It was very strange, wasn't it? Yeah.
But those shows... I've not seen it, but those shows do tend to over-characterise... the characters, don't they? Just to make them into a ridiculous version.
And it's Guy Ritchie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a bit of a weird mix of people involved because Guy Ritchie was the name everyone talked about. He was, I think, maybe directed the first couple of episodes. There was also Jez Butterworth, who is the great playwright and wrote some of Skyfall, I think, did he?
Yeah.
Also a great writer. And then there was one other person who I think was the showrunner. But lots of really great people involved, great cast. I watched all the episodes. It was very soapy, but it had some good twists. I'm interested to see what happens in the next series.
So they're shooting it now,
yeah. And here's a huge name drop. I actually got to interview Pierce Brosnan for this. So I met Pierce Brosnan and interviewed him to promote Mobland. Yes. And he was telling me, and this is like, oh yeah, he was letting me in on the secret. No, but they were still filming it while they were doing the junket. It was so close to The Wire being released. I don't know, as someone who works in the industry, can you explain why that might have happened? At least they need breathing space.
Usually they do, but I think it's not a show that relies too much on anything in post, so any special effects. It's not heavy on that. A lot of it's done in camera. There's a lot of just conversations with the characters. And with that in mind, you could go a lot closer to the release to the wrap date, to the release date.
Right.
Whereas if you're shooting something like Rings of Power or House of the Dragon, you need, you know,
months of post.
A year. Yeah. Almost right. A year in post. Whereas this, they could rattle out quite quickly, because I think it started shooting at the beginning of the year and it was released by...
Yeah, it came together really quickly. Do you have any insight on who's in it or no?
Returning cast.
Well, the only person I'm interested in is Tom Hardy, because at the end of the series...
Spoilers, spoiler alert.
Well, the end of the series is touch and go whether or not he would survive to the next series. So, yeah. If you're nodding, he's in it. Or
I'm not nodding.
Right, okay. Anyway, I watched it. I liked it. I didn't love it. It was fine.
Yeah.
So it was just one of those shows. And then, obviously, at the time as well, Pierce Brosnan was photographed at an Aston Martin factory. Did you see those pictures?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, he really looks the part still, doesn't he?
He does.
He's actually, I think he's come into this period where, from Bond to now, he's always been cool. There's a sort of question mark around going from something that cool to going into the later stages of life. What's that going to look like? You know, you're an older man. Anything could happen. You could become like Michael Caine or something, who's obviously not debonair or anything now, but he's still very light. But he's gone back into this sort of cool again, like super cool character that's playing the sort of Bondish role, not like an older Bondish characterization, not necessarily the actual character.
But it's of that ilk, isn't it? It's sort of debonair. It's well dressed. It's of someone of power and all that sort of stuff. And he's got a few projects coming out. I haven't seen much else that he's done.
You see Black Bag?
I did see Black Bag, and we'll talk about that in the New Year episode, because we'll talk about our favourite films of the year. Mm. But that was very much Bond-coded, because he played like the M role in that, didn't he?
Yeah.
But those photos of him at Aston Martin just set the internet alight. I mean, he just looked the part. He was asked many times on that. I was told, and I was under strict instruction not to ask him about Bond.
Yeah.
So I kind of played it very cool with him. But he was asked at that time, like, whether he'd come back as Bond, and people want him to play an old Bond, and he seems up for the idea. And I'm still hopeful that could happen if we have like the Amazon situation where you've got multiple versions, like a short 5-episode mini series of an old man Bond. I'm here for it.
Mm. That's how you do it. If Amazon are going to do something that sort of ties it all together,
there seems to be a big push at the moment in the older market of shows, like, you know, I keep bringing up Thursday Murder Club, but those sorts of shows where they go, we'll get loads and loads of really well-respected older actors in together. We know that audience is massive. We know, and my parents loved that film. They thought it was amazing. If you got loads of old Bond actors together and made a film about Bond, it would be incredible. Yeah. And every person over the age of 50 will think that's just to see that, won't they?
Yeah.
Young people will have a clue what's going on, but I think that's what would happen, because they will have access to all those people very easily.
Yeah, that would be amazing. And like get Dalton in at some stage, some capacity. Talking of Dalton though, he was in with Helen Mirren in that Yellowstone prequel series as well. I think that sort of fits into that bracket as well. Yeah. Harrison Ford, Helen Mirren, Timothy Dalton. I think it's called 1822 or something. I've never seen any of those shows, but I think there is something there.
There's certainly that demographic is really getting well represented in funding.
Because they're the only demographic with money now.
That's so true.
That's what it is.
Yeah, they're not watching it on TikTok, are they?
And they're probably still going to the cinema and stuff for a big thing.
Pierce Brosnan, big year for him this year, and couldn't be happening to a nicer bloke, I don't think. Mm. But there's a couple of new books which were either announced or came out this year. I have to confess, I'm not into James Bond spin-off books so much. Does anyone know about
I saw them on the list. No, I don't know what you're talking about.
There's a Felix Leiter book from Raymond Benson, who was on the podcast.
He was.
Yeah. He was on the podcast. And Kim Sherwood's third James Bond spin-off book also came out. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just don't get involved with any
of those
things.
She was also on the podcast.
She was also on the podcast, yeah. So big time for, if you've read any of those books, then please let us know. But if you're into that sort of stuff, it's good for the Ian Fleming brand to keep this stuff coming out.
Yeah.
I think there was a couple of Ian Fleming re-releases as well, perhaps, but no, not our world. We had a re-release or a new release of the 4K Sean Connery box set.
Mm-hmm.
So you could watch all the Sean Connery James Bond films except Never Say Never Again in 4K.
So you still can't watch Never Say Never Again in 4K?
I don't know if... No.
720.
I think there's a Blu-ray. Never seen.
Not worth it, is it? Not worth it.
Yeah.
You really need to see that in 4K.
Because end of last year, there was a lot of talk around a 4K James Bond box set. Where is it? Is it coming out? Mm. And then they just released this one. Mm. It was kind of a weird one. It's a nice box set and the films look absolutely stunning. The transfers are amazing. I just wonder why they didn't include on Her Majesty's Secret Service, because what box set is that going to go into?
As soon as this Bond stuff kicks up with Amazon, there's going to be release after release, isn't there? There's stuff coming out. But I suppose they're not going to be bothered about physical copies anymore.
This is the thing, is whether or not there's still a market for physical copies. I think there is still a market for physical releases. You know, you've got a lot of boutique Blu-ray and 4K brands who release these things for limited release, but
Amazon aren't going to want that market, are they? They're going to...
They want them on their platform, streaming stuff. And whether we'll ever get a 4K box set of the whole thing seems unlikely at this stage.
Yeah.
There's a Craig one, I think. You get the Craig films in 4K. Yeah. Sir Roger might be next, but it's just that on Her Majesty's Secret Service. Do you do a Dalton Lazenby box set? Like
that? You could do Dalton Lazenby Brosnan.
That's a weird mix, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
But anyway, if you've got them on... I've got them on Apple. I think they're on 4K on there anyway, aren't they? So you can get them. There's some soundtracks. There's a lot of soundtrack news this year, which, again, I don't really follow.
I don't think many people follow soundtrack news, do they? What have we got?
Well, La La Land is the brand that re-releases a lot of these James Bond things. And it's a lot of hidden, like unreleased cues and stuff that people have been after for a long time.
Yeah.
Again, not really for me. There was Goldfinger, License to Kill, on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Mm-hmm.
Moonraker, I think, is the most recent one I saw.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if you're into that sort of stuff, fair play, but not our world.
Mm-hmm.
Something that is our world, though. Road to a Million.
Oh, now we're talking. Let's kick this off.
Right, we've done the intro. 2 hours of debriefing on that. Anyone?
I know nothing about it. I've actively avoided finding out about it because I want it to be such a big, nice surprise.
Well, the surprise for me, having not seen it, by the way, that Brian Cox returned because wasn't there confusion?
Hold on, wait. Has it already been done?
It's out.
Wow, okay. Well, there you go.
It came out.
That's not really been marketed very well to Bond fans, has it?
Because I thought there was some confusion early on in season one where Brian Cox took it thinking he was going to be in a Bond film.
I don't believe that. I can't believe that.
He's a smart man, isn't he?
He knows much better than
So that's confirmed. The fact he's back means
I think he's a serious actor and he didn't want to be seen as doing reality TV, so he had to pretend he'd been hoodwinked into it. I mean, come on.
It's a pretty safe thing to be involved with if you don't want to be recognised as being involved in it.
Yeah. I mean, it's the closest he might get to being in a Bond film, right? He was in the Bourne films, but I don't know. Road to a Million season two, if you watched it, fair play. I watched one episode of the first series and it was not for me.
Did
anyone finish watching the first season?
No.
Okay.
No. I hear that the second series was better and like had more Bond connections, but I just, no.
But when we last talked about this, there's so much other better reality television.
Oh,
so. I mean, you could look at Traitors. That you could do something like that with the Bond concept.
Just put a Bond skin over Traitors.
Traitors is not, if you look at how they've made Traitors, it's a very simple concept. Yeah. Obviously, it's got nice set pieces, but...
It's very Skyfall coded, isn't it?
It looks like Skyfall, I mean, you could do something like that very easily. Yeah. Like we talked about, you know, we're not going to go through it again, but what was the idea? Spectre Island or something.
Yeah.
That would have worked really well for Traitors.
Yeah.
That sort of thing, but...
Scrap Heap Challenge, that was when we were... But I think that's the last thing we'll get from the brain of Michael G. Wilson and Barbara Broccoli. So kind of a weird epitaph for their tenure as their...
It's not an epitaph. Nobody knows. No, it didn't even exist.
It's a footnote, isn't it? Yeah. And then also they did this and no one cared. I mean, again, if you watched it and you loved it and you were on it, fair play to you, but it wasn't for us. There was this weird story more recently around Amazon and the posters for the James Bond films. Did you see this?
I love this.
Yeah.
I love this.
Can you explain what happened?
Well, was it with the release, the thumbnails on Amazon, the interface on Amazon, they'd removed the guns from all of the fronts of all the films. But they'd used photos where they had guns. So they'd basically not all of the Bond films have a gun in them, but most of them do have Bond holding a gun. And they just removed them with Photoshop. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
And But the problem is, some of them look, you look at them and go, why is he holding his hand? Remember that film? Which film was it? Is it a Nicolas Cage film?
Nicolas Cage, yeah. I know exactly. There's a Bangkok Dangerous.
Bangkok Dangerous. There's a poster for it, and he is basically, they've took out the gun, but the whole point of the photo is he's holding a gun.
And he's pulling the gun from inside his jacket.
Yeah.
So he's holding his jacket, he's pulling his gun.
Yeah.
They took the gun out, so he's just pulling his jacket open with his hand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's essentially what they're doing there. So some of them do look absolutely ridiculous, because you're like, why has he got his hand in that position? There's a space in his hand for something.
Yeah. But is it Dr. No? The one, you know, where he's got his arms folded and he's just holding nothing. He's got like a claw, and there's nothing in it.
Yeah. But the problem, but do we know why? Presumably, it's just make it non-violent for those shots. But there's still shots of the guns in the other. If you go through Prime, you can see him with guns in like some of the
and loads of other franchises.
Yeah. You might have a picture of Pierce Brosnan with a weird hand, and then next to it, you've got, you know, a war film with a lot of people holding guns.
Yeah.
It's an odd concept.
I mean, in terms of explanations for it, I don't think we ever got a firm explanation for why they were removed. Amazon backtracked very quickly and put them reinstated in the original versions.
It's an odd thing too, because you could have just taken another photo.
But this is the thing. I think there is a very sort of pure altruistic reason for taking the guns off the thumbnails. Like, gun crime is a problem in America. Like, anything you can do to promote it, to not promote it is helpful. I find it now with kids. If I'm watching something, they've got guns in it. I'm like, I hit my head in my hands, because I'm like, I don't need guns in this. So I can see the reason for doing it, but when there's lots of other options where there's no guns in the picture anyway.
Yeah.
Do you think of all the fantastic photos that we've seen throughout the years taken that could all be used?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, those thumbnails need updating anyway. They look horrendous.
Yeah. They get worse all the time, don't they? It's like they're using the same ones and constantly editing them.
Just keep touching it up.
Putting a filter over the top of it so that it just looks like a random face.
Yeah.
Some of them look horrendous. Yeah, really. Really bizarre, but that was such a weird moment where, I mean, it just generated a ton of online pieces around it. So whether they just did it to raise awareness that the Bond films were on Prime, I mean, seems it's a bit tin-hatty to me. But
there's other things you could do to make that more interesting.
But does it raise concerns that moving forward, Amazon would release a gunless Bond film? And would that work?
I'm sure I saw some people editing bananas and stuff into those.
Yeah, it's like that thing you often see where it's just like, oh, this internet guy, and he edits people out of pictures. It was a bit like that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, it does raise a few concerns over like what that means for the future. There is one, is it View to a Kill where Bond only shoots his gun once?
Definitely Roger Moore.
It's Roger Moore, isn't it?
Man with a Golden Gun, isn't it?
We'll maybe do like a little fact check here and insert the correct answer here, but there is one where I think where only he shoots his gun once or something. But that could be, I mean, the gun is kind of a symbol. I mean, it's the James symbol of James Bond, isn't it? The gun. So
it's difficult to do Man with the Golden Gun without a gun.
Yeah. and the gun barrel.
What you're gonna edit out the word gun.
But like in the UK, they don't allow knives on posters anymore. I don't know if you ever saw, but when Knives Out came out, they had to redo all the artwork, because in the US it was a huge knife on the poster, and here in the UK they just got rid of
it. Can't still call it Knives Out though, because kids can read, so it's not like...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Look, it was just a bit of a funny story, which seemed to set the internet alight. And then we celebrated 20 years of Daniel Craig as James Bond. It's 20 years ago since he was announced as Bond on the River Thames. With his long hair and the life jacket. So that seems crazy. That was 20 years ago now.
Yeah. Well, next year will be 20 years of Casino Royale.
Wow. So that sort of modern era of Bond is very much a vintage era of Bond now. No Time to Die is almost a vintage movie now at this stage, isn't it? So. So that was 20 years of that. I wonder when we get the next James Bond announcement, whether they'll have learned their lesson and we'll get something different. It'll probably happen in Fortnite, won't it?
They're not going to do the same. That whole thing is like an old school format. You go somewhere nice, go to GoldenEye, and then we'll do an announcement. The world doesn't work like that anymore, does it?
No.
Yeah, Fortnite's a good shout.
Yeah, a little Fortnite event where you can log in and, I mean, I don't understand how that works, but... Yeah, they reveal the new James Bond.
In the metaverse.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, that's something to look forward to. And then finally, at the end of this year, there was this story that Eon filings revealed that they'd sold the James Bond creator control for $20 million,
mm-hmm.
which, again, made headlines. But if you looked into it more deeply, it kind of was absolute nonsense. They made a load more money than $20 million for the creative rights of James Bond. I mean, literally billions. Mm. So that kind of turned out to be a bit of a non-story. I know that the MI6 HQ website's got quite a good debunker on all of that. And it's often the case where, and I've been victim of this before, where like tabloids will do diggings in companies' house and just extrapolate X from Y, and it's just complete nonsense. Don't read everything you don't believe everything you read. They made a huge amount of money from that deal. And then I thought we'd just end this section with a little RIP section. Something to something cheerful,
something upbeat.
So Lee Tamahori, director of Die Another Day, he died after I believe long illness, which is quite sad. Obviously made Die Another Day one of the greatest of Bond movies.
Got to speak for yourself. That's my dad's favourite.
Yeah. But yeah, very sad news that he died. And then just some of the other people we lost this year. So at the end of last year, Vic Flick, the guy who played the guitar riff on the James Bond theme song, the very original version, the John Barry version, he died. Very sad news. And then just a few other people of note who died this year. Joe Karoff, the guy who designed the gun logo.
Mm-hmm.
He died. Robert McGuinness, who created some of the best early Bond posters. I think You Only Live Twice and that sort of era. Some fantastic posters that he did. He died. Behind the scenes, Alan Church, who was worked with Maurice Binder. And then some of the actors who died this year. We had Michael Madsen, Die Another Day. And the Die Another Day curse struck again because we also had the death of Emilio Echeverria, who played Raul, the guy in Cuba. Remember him?
Long hair. I'm with you.
The guy who played Dmitry Myskin in GoldenEye, Tetchki Karyo. I don't know if I'm probably saying that right. But Joe Don Baker. Joe Don Baker I would always associate with the very first episode we ever recorded. Because I think we did the third episode first, and he was one of the first people we ever talked about on the podcast. He was obviously Brad Whitaker in Living Daylights and Jack Wade in GoldenEye and Tomorrow Never Dies. But like, great loss. I mean, he didn't do a huge amount of things in recent years. So that was quite sad. And then Bruce Glover, obviously famously played Mr. Wint, died this year as well. So groundbreaking character in that film. It's our forever.
Yes. Yeah. Good. RIP.
Yeah. We just quickly mention that there was a few Bond films had their anniversaries this year as well. Thunderball, 60.
Mm-hmm.
View to a Kill, 40. GoldenEye, 30. Inspector, 10. Only one of those got a re-release in cinemas. Do you know which one it was?
GoldenEye.
Yeah. Back in cinemas for its 30th anniversary. Yeah. Did anyone go?
No.
I really wanted to go. It just felt like a really bad time for me to go. But I had seen it when they did the 60th anniversary re-release.
I think GoldenEye I've seen a couple of times at the cinema since its original release at like BFI type things.
Yeah.
Stuff.
I mean, it's...
It's only 70 times you can watch it.
I mean, I still think it's a great point.
One of the most interesting to watch, isn't it? Rewatchable ones.
Yeah.
They did a screening at Pinewood in the Garden, similar to the Goldfinger.
Our invite?
We had an invite.
GoldenEye.
We did have an invite, but I was busy. It was my birthday.
Oh, mate.
Didn't let us know then.
That's put this anger on the podcast.
Fuming. We're calling an end to it now. Okay, let's take a quick break and we will be back with you shortly.
Hello, I'm Roger Moore, and I'd like to wish you all happy, happy holidays. And if you've got any turkey left over, you can send it to me.
Whether I'm worried about hosting or just giving that perfect gift, creating a delicious holiday for my loved ones is super important to me. From effortless holiday hostings to unforgettable gifts, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. They've always been super convenient in giving me the most high-quality steaks I could ask for, whether for myself or a loved one. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com. And for an extra $35 off, use code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Go to omahasteaks.com and use code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back. We are now at going to talk about a big James Bond project that we do know a bit more about, which is 007 First Light.
Yes.
Now, this is a new video game, the first video game, first new James Bond video game for years.
2012.
Right? Was the last one.
007 Legends.
Right. And so we talked about this last year and we had very few details on it. It's by IO Interactive, is that right?
That's correct.
Behind the Hitman game.
Yeah.
And so it was in the works for a long, long time. Nothing was happening. Oh, like, it was all going on behind the scenes. And then earlier this year, we got a first look.
Yeah, we got they dropped a video on YouTube and stuff. And it was a big video. They showed a lot of gameplay on it, because there were a lot of questions on it before. People were thinking, is it just going to be a Hitman game? Is it going to be like a bigger game? Is it going to be like a bit more open world? But it seems to be like they're very much, it is a Hitman game, but with other stuff involved as well. So you drive cars in here. I think you drive boats as well. And the thing about Hitman is that Hitman is very much about, and this is apparently part of the pitch process where IO Interactive went to speak to them about getting the rights to do the game. They basically, their proposal is, it shouldn't all just be about shooting. Bond is not going around shooting all the time. He's trying to find ways to not shoot, which fits perfectly with Hitman, because Hitman, although it's a game where you have guns and stuff, you're not really meant to use the guns. You're meant to solve the problems without guns.
Right.
Which is, I think, the thing that won over. Well, at the time, it would have been, it wouldn't have been Amazon at the time when they did the deal. But so, yeah, so we've got the full gameplay trailer for it. It comes out in March next year. It looks like it's going to be a big one. They've put a lot of effort into it. And I think it's the first time we've really seen a Bond game where they haven't based it on an existing part of the franchise. So we've seen Bond games where they've used GoldenEye, where they've Nightfire, where they've used actual Bond references and Bond characters. This is starting from scratch. So there's a lot of talk at the time about, is this Bond that they're going to get in this the new Bond? The actor who plays it is Patrick Gibson, and he was he's quite a well established actor. He played Dexter in Dexter,
the young Dexter.
He plays the young Dexter, so he's a visible actor. He's young. He looks the part. They actively made the character in First Light not look like any other Bond. They didn't want him to be associated with any Bond. It's very easy to do that. So, yeah, what we're getting is a completely new take on an origin story for Bond, where he gets a 00 status.
What platforms is this game coming to?
All the main ones. So it'll be on PS5, Xbox. I think it's on PC, and it'll be on Switch 2.
Right.
So it's a pretty big deal, this game. And it comes out in March next year.
And obviously game releases, you know, A-list game releases are few and far between these days. So this should do very well.
Well, I think the thing about, if you look historically at Bond games, they're not normally that good. They're tie-ins with movies, and they're very much like, you know, you like Bond, you play that game, that's it. You're not buying that game. You're not excited about it if you don't like Bond. The idea behind this is that it's probably not focused just on Bond people. It's a game that people want to play anyway. And with the online world of, Hitman 3 is a good example. People have been playing Hitman 3 for years because they keep adding new levels. There's currently a new assassination mission with Bruce Lee in it. So they add in, they do quite a lot of Bond ones as well. In fact, I imagine part of the agreement that they did, they could access some of the Bond characters. So there was one mission where it was the Casino Royale with Le Chiffre. Really good. They got Mikkelsen to be an actor in it. And you're basically playing out the whole Casino Royale poker mission. So hopefully what will happen is the game will get released. Everyone will really like it. And they keep releasing updates to it so that I assume they'll get other Bond characters in. I'll assume they'll sort of build it out like that. But it, for Bond fans, it could be incredible.
So is it a linear gameplay in terms of, how you...
It looks like it's going to be mission-based. Hitman 3 is mission-based, so you go from place to place and you do those missions and then you go to another place. So it's not an open world where you can go and do everything.
Right.
You complete each mission. But this has driving, this has boats in it, it has lots more action in it. So there is, you shoot people, you will have gunfights in it. But it does look linear, but I imagine there will be a bit of both. So with all these games, there will be a story mode, I imagine, where you complete all the missions to follow his story.
Yeah.
And then I also imagine there will be very much a mission-based one where you can go back and do missions, or you can try out a mission which probably isn't associated with the story, and they'll keep adding those up. There's a really nice feature in Hitman 3, which is a sniper feature, where you basically are sniping a whole scene and you have to take out certain people without being noticed. It's a completely different game. So there's lots of options where they might introduce things like that in as well.
So is this going to have a theme song?
Yes, I bet it will.
So the big rumour was that Lana Del Rey is doing the theme song this. Mm. Because I don't know if you remember, but when they did the Brosnan games, there was a number of different songs. I think Nicole Scherzinger did one. And Joss Stone, because she was in one of the games, right?
Yeah, she was, yeah.
Yeah. And I think I don't know how much I can say, but I know that I recently found out who the Bond girl in inverted commas is.
I don't know.
I don't know if that's been publicly announced.
I don't know.
I won't say who that is.
Yeah.
So I think there will be a theme song. And
I think they're treating this as, in the previous ones, there's been certain, GoldenEye was actually really low key. They didn't expect it to be popular, so it didn't really have anything associated with it.
Do you mean the 64?
The original 64, which is the greatest game of all time, one of the greatest games of all time, that was never meant to be that good. So
it came out a year after the movie, or at least like a long time after
97,
the movie.
It was a couple of years.
We're not going to go to GoldenEye now, but the original GoldenEye 64, but that game was never meant to be that popular. It was meant to be a tie-in that wasn't that expensive to make. It was a surprise. Yeah. But throughout the history of Bond games, very few have really had we're focusing everything on this game. They're always like, there's a film getting released, let's release a game of it as well. This is different. This is like separate entity that they will throw a lot behind.
Yeah.
And I think it will probably, it'll be difficult to, in a few years' time to go, actually, that Bond song, maybe that's canon. Maybe that's we'll class that as a Bond song. It's that big.
Yeah.
I think when you're referencing GoldenEye there, I think one of the interesting things is about the timing of it. I know we said previously that this was, that Road to a Million was the last of the Barbara Broccoli and Michael G. Wilson sanctioned releases. But in fact, this will be, because this predates their handing over the creative control. So we could probably consider this to be the last of their throws of the dice. And talking about GoldenEye, it's very good timing for the series, because like you said, it's like who is interested in Bond anymore that's under the age of 20, 25, 30 even.
Mm.
But this will open it up to a whole new generation of people who, like you say, if they're pitching it as this AAA game, not necessarily as a tie-in or something that's like, it's a brand and it's a franchise and you can just jump in at this starting point and this could be your introduction to Bond.
Yeah.
It bodes well, right?
The way that these games work nowadays is that, look at Fortnite, they are marketing juggernauts. Somebody releases a Marvel film, stick the character in this, you've marketed your Marvel film to the right audience. So I imagine this one will... people are playing it. Hitman is massive still. It's not a new game anymore, but people are always playing it because they have the new missions. When they eventually release the Bond film, you could just do a mission based on that Bond film, throw some of the characters in. Suddenly all the kids are like, oh, I'll watch that film now because, I've seen it. So it's a very, very shrewd, clever move. And it's a smart move to go for IO Interactive as well, because they are probably one of the best developers out at the moment.
So is there a chance that Amazon take this opportunity to ride the coattails of this release if it's a success.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. It will be massive. Next year, this will be one of the top 5, top 10 game releases.
Because you've got GTA. It's been pushed back again, though, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Which means that's, that frees up even more space for the first line.
Yeah, this will be one of the big ones next year.
And so in terms of like it feeling like a Bond thing, I know last time we talked about it, we had a question mark over whether they have cars and driving in it, but you said the cars...
It's all Aston Martins, it's all driving around Swiss roads. I think a lot of the missions will be based on places that we are, maybe not the exact places we've seen in films, but places that look very much like them. So you get the retro element to it as well. But yeah, it'll be very... I think there'll be a lot of... callbacks to all the films for the people who know them, but people who the kids watch playing it, it doesn't matter. They're just like this. I remember the desert now, am I? Right, okay.
Yeah. So you think we'll have locations that we will be familiar to Bond fans?
Yes.
From Blofeld's Lair,
from the gameplay trailer,
and Pippa's Gloria and stuff like that.
I think, I mean, what I imagine will happen, I don't know this, but I imagine that most of the missions will be different places that are from the films, because every location you'd ever. It probably exists already, right? You know, jungle, desert, Italian and Alps. All those are already in films. But I think they'll just keep releasing new locations over time.
Horse racing track.
That was probably the least likely. Or Parisian lab.
Right.
That's probably not going to happen.
And talk about tropes. So cars, we know for sure. He will have guns in it. So
there will be lots of guns, PDA, gadgets. Yeah. There are lots of gadgets.
Gadgets, that's the one I wanted to get onto, yeah.
So Hitman 3 uses gadgets. A lot of gadgets.
Right.
They have like rubber ducks that are bombs and stuff like that. Basically, the whole point of Hitman 3 is that you are assassinating people using whatever means necessary, which means you replay the missions over and over again to do it in different ways and find different characters and stuff like that.
So could we see the pen from... Goldeneye.
I have a feeling that, I think that
sort of thing.
Yeah, they'll throw stuff like that in left, right, and centre. There's so many gadgets and gizmos in Hitman 3. They'll definitely reuse all of the tropes that we've got already.
So it almost becomes a platform for Bond Online in terms of being able to see, like, if there's, like you were saying about if a Marvel film comes out, they could put a Marvel character in there.
Hmm.
If there's a Bond anniversary, movie anniversary, they could say, oh, hey, guess what? We've got this. I'm just trying to think what's in 2016.
I imagine all of the missions won't explicitly reference any other Bond film.
Casino Royale, for example. If it's 20 years old next year, there'll be a Casino Royale mission.
Well, Hitman 3 has had so many tie-ins. There must have been like 50 of them. Like they've got famous actors from different films, different concepts that related. Like the Bruce Lee one, I've not played it yet, but... it's essentially just all about, you know, following Bruce Lee around as he's doing a martial arts tournament. And if you think about it in the Bond world, it's just, you could do so much. You could just do a mission which is, right, this is that scene from Skyfall. And you might even be able to get the actor in. Probably we'll be able to get the actor. If it's big enough, and it will be, they'll be able to pay the big actors to come in and do, like, a mission.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that some of the pre-order skins and stuff like that. So you can play in costumes that are familiar from James Bond films. I saw that one of them was his Day of the Dead costume from Spectre.
Yeah, they'll have loads of that, right. Yeah. They have new costumes all the time. So they... in Hitman...
Clown.
They've got a clown.
A gorilla suit.
Hitman 3 has... Exactly, there's a Santa Claus mission. So you get a Santa Claus suit and you get to keep it once you've done the mission.
Right.
So there's loads of them.
Does that impact the game if you're dressed as Santa? People go, why are you dressed as Santa? Or is it not...
I don't think it doesn't matter unless it's you're on a mission where that's relevant. So if you were doing a mission where you were playing, that was a part of the mission where maybe, you know, there's a Christmas scene and you play Santa and you put a bomb under the chair of the elf or something like that. That's where it happened. But in the other missions, it doesn't really make a difference. So if you dress as Blofeld and you're wandering around in a GoldenEye mission, they're probably not going to go, why is Blofeld here?
So, but obviously Patrick Gibson is Bond and he's the character that you play, but... Would there be opportunities to play as Dalton or like...
Not yet, I don't think. I think they'd be actively avoiding that.
Come down the line?
Never happened. The whole point of... It's a bit different with First Light because there's a character, Hitman... The Hitman character, Agent 47, he has a sort of story, but the whole idea of him is that he's sort of a nondescript character, whereas this has a story. So I don't think you'd be too complicated. Mm. You might be able to change it. I don't know, change it in future, but I think this is very much, you have to stick to the character, the story.
Yeah, okay. So you wouldn't be able to play as Jinx, for example.
No, it's not. Not GoldenEye 64.
Right. Yeah. Odd job.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd ever. I don't think you'd ever play.
Whatever it was.
I don't think you'd ever be able to play as another character. Right. You do just play with their outfits.
Right. Yeah. And okay. One thing I
Jinx's
saw.
Jinx's outfit.
I saw some of the gameplay, and one of the things was that Bond can use his charm to get past people.
Yeah. I mean, that's not a part of Hitman, but you do. Yeah. There's different ways to solve the things, so you can go and, you know, interact with somebody and do stuff, but I imagine there's probably going to be loads of elements that are new, because if they just use the engine from Hitman 3, that it's going to be quite boring for people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think some of it's going to be similar, some of it will be different. So, yeah, charm obviously is something that might work quite well for Bond. I don't know what the system will be for sexual engagements and stuff like that. That seems like that doesn't happen in Hitman 3. You don't
just
ever...
a blank screen for 2 minutes.
That's not cropped up in Hitman 3.
And there's a chance for, like, in Hitman, dialogue. Can you have dialogue with characters and there's like a dialogue tree?
No. It will happen, but okay. You don't control.
Is there potential for dialogue in first player?
I don't know. I've not seen it in the gameplay trailer.
I mean, the bit that I saw where he climbed through the window and then he sort of used his charm to say, oh, I'm testing the... the security here, and he throws the guy off, and like, so I think there is some of that, and from what I've read about
it's probably not like a story based thing where you're actually communicating with people. It's probably you're in an outfit, you go up to somebody in that outfit, you will interact with that person that outfit. He's not going to be like, you know, choose from four options. Mm-hmm. You've got nice hair today.
Yeah, it's Roger Moore, is it?
I'm hoping there's a Roger Moore voice on it.
We're talking about this as is it's in a way that we think it's going to be good with a trip. Like, forgive me, it's been a while since I've been in that world, but like, is there a chance that it might not be very good?
I think there's a small chance. I think there's a small chance. I think with, if you look at movie tie-in games, you generally end up in a scenario where there's a time limit on it. It has to get delivered on that time. That's the most important thing, because people will buy that game, whatever, and they know that there's a shelf life for it. So, you know, you buy...
The Avatar game.
Yeah. There's a window for you buying that game. Nobody's buying that game anymore. This isn't tied in with anything.
Right.
Nobody's going to buy this game because they're going, I'm really into Bond this month. It's completely separate. It's a game that sits on its own. And that's actually a testament probably to the fact that we have lost the momentum of Bond, and this is now... sits on its own. In fact, if it was being released 5 years ago, you know, No Time to Die game, 3 years ago, whatever, if that was being released at the same time, you might go, a bit worried about this, because they're sort of trying to get this out at the same time as the film, and it has to tie in with the film. There's no constraints on this. So I think this might actually, I'm 99% sure it's going to be pretty damn good.
Okay.
Because of previous games I've played from.
And also it's IO, and previously it was EA that had the rights.
EA work on a very different system then. I mean, IO Interactive are using, I don't know if it's the same game engine, but they're using a very similar system for some of the game. So it's not going to be alien to people if you've played Hitman 3. EA's games are previously always built on the same sort of thing. You play an EA game, and next one you go, yeah, I know this is an EA game.
Yeah. So EA did the early noughties. Who did the 007 Legends?
Activision.
Activision, yeah. Which is basically a Call of Duty skin, right?
Well,
even
less so than that, yeah.
There's a lot of just shooting, hiding behind things and shooting.
I think we played the GoldenEye Legends one when we lived together, I think, and it felt very Call of Duty-esque.
Yeah, they are generally just reskins, and they're not building a game from scratch. You see that a lot with these movie tie-ins where it could be any game. You look at, there was a Star Wars one I bought recently, Star Wars Outlaws.
Right.
Apparently that wasn't meant to be a Star Wars game. It was meant to be another game, and then they just said... we need a Star Wars game. So the whole thing is like, you could be any game.
Okay.
The fact that it's Star Wars is irrelevant, whereas this is like...
Built from the ground up.
Yeah, you're not going to play it and go, is this a Bond game?
Yeah.
It's going to be like, oh, clearly they built this from the... they spent ages creating a Bond game so that everything is relevant.
Well, I look forward to reconvening this time next year for a full debrief.
Hopefully, we'll still be playing it.
Yeah. Maybe we should get together and play it together. And
So there's no. I don't know what I don't think there's any plans for it to be multiplayer. I might be miss something, but I think it's very much a single player.
So just take turns until someone dies. And,
yeah, just take turns.
Classic, like the 90s.
Or people just sit in the back going, use the pen. It's mightier than the sword. Different film genre.
Well, that's 007 First Light. That's out in March next year. March 2026.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and there is also if you type in by 007 First Light, there is a version that option that crops up, which is £259. It's called, what's it called? It's like a special edition set, and you get. I've sent you this, haven't I? The Man with the Golden Gun set.
Right.
£260. You get the game, and then you also get like this Man with the Golden Gun little model thing that comes with it, and some other little bits and pieces. I'm not sure many people are going to buy that.
You'd be surprised, I think.
More tat.
It's but how much is the game on its own going to be?
I'm not sure. I think it's about £60, £60, £70. Most games are around that much at the moment. Don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the same on all systems. I imagine PC would probably be a bit cheaper. But
yeah. Well, I look forward to hearing about it next year. And I've really got a platform to play it on myself. And so take some investment to get on board. But yeah, I look forward to hearing about it. Okay. All right, let's get on to the meat of this. Those are just the hors d'oeuvre. Let's talk about Bond 26, because obviously it's the big question on everyone's lips in terms of Bond fans, and specifically our podcast has always been about the movies and where like that, how that's going to progress. And this year was the year where we got loads of information, loads of new details about what was going to happen. I mean, we went through when we finished the podcast 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
That we were in a state of limbo. No Time to Die came out. There was no clear path forward for it. This year, 2025, is the year that all that changed. We talked a little bit about the Amazon takeover that happened in February at the start of the year. That was seismic news. We did a whole podcast about that you can revisit and listen to and hear our thoughts on that. And I think one of the main things that we took away from it at that time was we felt a certain amount of loss, and that this era of Eon was over, but now we've got a new era to think about and look forward to. I think collectively we sort of agreed that we didn't want to do something every time something new was announced, right?
Yeah.
Because it just becomes too much. We love doing the podcast, obviously, but
we do a Christmas roundup.
The Christmas roundup, I think, is enough for us, but now gives us a chance to talk about some of the developments from it. So when we did the last episode, there was many question marks, and one of the main things we talked about was what happened next would be the determining factor, because it was all up in the air. Amazon had ceded, Eon had ceded creative control to Amazon. Amazon now had a blank slate to do whatever they want with the series. Yeah. And the first thing that happened in March, a month later, was that we got new producers confirmed for James Bond 26, which they're not even calling Bond 26 at this stage, right? I'm sure they'll call it Bond Zero or Bond Number One, like they did with Doctor Who and Disney. It's like no one seems to be calling it Bond 26. But who are the new producers?
David Heyman.
Yes.
Who produced the Harry Potter films.
More importantly, the Paddington films.
And the Paddington films.
Yep.
And created Heyday Films. And so that's his film company. So it has a track record of successful releases.
Successful releases, and also films with a very British identity.
Yeah.
Harry Potter and Paddington, I would argue, are the totems of the British film industry, right? If you think about now, and Bond used to be that, but now the biggest export are Potter and Paddington.
Yeah.
So to me, that seemed like an open goal. And he did Once Upon a Time in Hollywood as well with Quentin Tarantino.
Didn't know that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So that to me seemed like an obvious one. And who else? Amy Pascal.
Okay, yeah.
Amy Pascal, who was for a long time head of Sony Pictures.
That's right.
Was head of Sony Pictures when James Bond made Casino Royale, Quantum of Solace, Skyfall, and Spectre. So she has produced from a higher up perspective Bond films in the past.
Yeah.
No Time to Die, produced by Universal, so slightly different what she wasn't involved. Amy Pascal, also known for Spider-Man, the Spider-Man reboot at Marvel, and Barbie. Or was that David Heyman?
That was David Heyman. I think it was both of them.
That was both of them. Yeah. Right, okay. So that was big news. What were your reactions to that? As someone who works in the film industry, you might have a bit more inside knowledge on...
It's a safe pair of hands. It's a sensible choice.
Right.
It seems like the sort of people to that would take over the mantle from Barbara and Michael J. Wilson. I think it was sensible. It wasn't a flash in the pan. It's like, okay, who's going to steady this ship? Or not even steady the ship, it's create a new ship
and
get it set sail. They've both got proven track records for that.
Well, I would say that's one way of looking at it. Another way is that they already have a lot of things, whereas you look at Rockley's, that was their sole focus. So you're not passing it. It's not like for like. You're not going, you're no longer working on anything else. You're working on this. You're actually saying, we know you're working on lots of things, or you're involved with a lot of things. Here's another thing. So it might, you know, the involvement might be a bit different.
I would say that that's very astute, actually, because I don't think that David Heyman alone could have done it. Or could be entrusted to, not entrusted, but has the capacity for it, because he is making the 10 series of Harry Potter. Yes. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So he's got that in the background.
Yep.
He's also still a producer on Paddington,
yep.
which they just obviously released a third movie last year. He's got that on his plate. Amy Pascal has more Spider-Man movies.
Yep.
But Barbie, I don't know what's happening with that, but like, I'm sure they'll probably want to do more of that. But I think what's interesting is with the pairing is David Heyman is very much, he's a UK person, can deliver billion-dollar franchises. Amy Pascal, US-based, can deliver billion-dollar franchises. Combined together, it's quite a powerhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And also it means they can share the load of what needs to be done.
It just depends how you look at it, doesn't it? I mean, they're basically, you know, you're talking about steering the ship. They're steering a lot of ships. They're more like Commodores working across all of it. So it's probably going to be nice to have them involved, but who is really going to be on it day to day? Who's going to own Bond and not worry about anything else? Because that's all the Broccoli's did. They did a few other little things, didn't they? But really, day in, day out, that was the main focus. And you need someone really on it.
And that's when their next decision would have you know, been a really important one.
New password. Yes, they have made some decisions since taking over. And we'll talk about those in a second. But I do think that they have, I think they both bring something new to the table in terms of what we've had before. Barbara and Michael, like, fair play to them. They steered the ship since GoldenEye, and they had their own way of doing things. These two new people... It's a whole new, whole new kettle of fish, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah, and the way that, I mean, they're basically like what, executive producers managing the whole, just going overlooking the whole thing. But the way decisions are made, the Broccoli's were an old school system, weren't they? They worked old school. A lot of the discussions that they had with like Amazon stuff was basically the old versus the new way of doing things. This will be a very much a new way of doing things, like the targets and what they're trying to do will be very different now, and the decisions they make will be very different because they'll be tied in with bigger things now. Like the fact that there might be, you know, if they're working, you know, if you're working on Harry Potter, the series, the decision-making behind that is probably something that's going to lead on to the decision-making behind Bond, because they're going to go, what would you do with a series? How would you pan this out in a series? Because we know we're basing our whole revenue stream for the next 10 years on the Harry Potter thing you're doing. You also want to do that with Bond. How's revenue going to be generated over the next 10 years for the Bond franchise? You're not going to go, I'm going to make a film over 2 years. What are you going to do? What can we do? What are the options?
Yeah. And I think something that will definitely be lost, and I work in the industry, so I've spoken to people that have worked on numerous Bond films, and they've said, that's it, in terms of like how Bond films are made. It was always very much like a Bond family, and they were like, that ended as soon as this it changed hands. That's ended. It's going to be very much like every other franchise now.
There was
as I said before, there was always a prism of through Barbara and Michael and how things were done.
Yeah, which might not be the right way. It might be a better way to do things, but it'll be different.
So everything now will be through the lens of them and their decisions that they make. And I said, both have got a great track record of creating billion-dollar movies. David Heyman specifically understands the British side of it, which is essential to Bond. The big question mark now is where they make it as well, where they always used to make them at Pinewood.
I mean, you would assume it's going to be Shepperton.
Why is that?
Because Amazon MGM have built an incredible number of stages.
Right.
Shepperton is now half Netflix and half Amazon Prime.
Right.
So Amazon MGM will... They'd be mad not to use all of the backlot they've built, all of the stages that they've built. It seems like a bit of a no-brainer.
Yeah. And I think there'll probably be a token gesture where they hire the Roger Moore stage or the 007 stage or whatever.
Just use the wet tank.
For one thing and say that they've done it there. And that's very interesting. Both producers with great track records, and now it falls on them to then bring in the key creatives. And that we've got the first sense of the key creatives in June when they announced that Denis Villeneuve would be the director of James Bond 26, the next James Bond film. So cast your mind back. What was your initial reaction to Denis Villeneuve being named as the director for Bond, Wheatley?
Positive. I thought when I heard that, I was like, this is interesting. It wasn't, you could have picked any name and gone, that's pretty boring. He is not a boring director. He's a very interesting director that's probably going to push things a little bit further and make a definitely a visual concept, but it's a good choice, I think, and he's not going to be cheap.
That is sure. And one thing to say about Denis Villeneuve is that he is in the midst of making Dune Part 3, which will come to cinemas in December 2026, which means that they can't really do anything until that's out the door. They can start working on pre-production, I imagine, once production on Dune is out of the way, right? But that, to me, is a big statement of intent in that they want to make the best movie possible and they will wait for the right person to come along rather than rushing into doing it.
Yeah.
What was your initial reaction?
I think it also made sense. I mean, look what he's done with franchises, existing franchises. Mm. He's come in and he's reinvigorated them or he's reimagined them. Mm. Why wouldn't you take some? If someone like that is available... and expensive, you would if they're willing to do it, you'd take them on.
There was probably a handful of directors that exist that you would have assumed that they would put in a hat. He was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a report in the days running up to it from Matt Bellany, who's like this industry guy, journalist, and he had an inside report which said that Amy Pascal and David Heyman were meeting a group of directors. They were actively pitching to do Bond 26. Those directors were Denis Villeneuve, who got the job, Edward Berger, who was the director of Conclave and All Quiet on the Western Front, Edgar Wright, Jonathan Nolan, who's best known for Westworld and also being the brother of Christopher Nolan, and Paul King.
That's interesting.
Who is the director of the first two Paddington
and
films.
And Wonka,
yeah. So that report, when I read that, was, I thought that was quite illuminating in that I'm going to take it at face value and say it's probably quite accurate that they were the directors that they spoke to. Now, Edgar Wright is a really interesting one because he has that theory or that sort of, he talks a lot about James Bond being dark chocolate and light chocolate, and that they swap it each time. So you had, from the light chocolate of Roger Moore, you went dark chocolate with Timothy Dalton, and you went light chocolate with Pierce Brosnan, and then you went darker again with Daniel Craig. So if in his theory or his idea would have been light chocolate.
So the AI Roger Moore.
Yes. But we would have, the suggestion there is that if Edgar Wright was going to come in, it would have been a complete tonal shift from what we had with the Daniel Craig era, which was very serious, very somber, very dark, very down to earth. There was humour in it, but it was very much focused on like being gritty and realistic. Now, the fact that Edgar Wright was part of that group of directors, as well as Paul King, suggested to me that at that stage they didn't have a clue which direction they wanted to go in. And when I heard the news that Denis Villeneuve had got it, I had my first gut instinct was almost a sense of disappointment that we were going to get a continuation of the tone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is on me. That's an assumption that I'm making about what Denis Villeneuve will make of Bond 26.
Yeah.
I'm going on the assumption that he'll make something similar to what he's made before. I don't know what he's pitched. I don't know what his concept for it was, but he would have come in with an idea for what Bond 26 is, and what he's pitched is what they want. My initial gut reaction was we're not going to get a lighter James Bond next. We're not going to get Paul King's take on James Bond, which in my personal opinion would have been really interesting.
Well, I think that if you look at all those directors, it is interesting. I think all of those, you could see what those Bond films would be like. But this is what I was saying about how whether to make decisions is going to be different now. So they're not, I think, I don't think an Edgar Wright Bond film would be particularly good, but I can see what it would look like, and it might work for like three films. They're not thinking in terms of that now. They're thinking in terms of big franchises. And if you have a very novelty sort of Bond that's lighter, it's funny, there's no longevity in it. You can't build something off of that because look at Shaun of the Dead type stuff. If he did that, I've not seen Running Man, but I've not heard it's particularly impressive. But if you look at that quirky, British-y style, like Paddington, it doesn't have franchise ability across loads and loads of things because it gets boring if you do that. Whereas Villeneuve, Dune, you could spin off so many Dune series, it's fine because you've got the theme, it's well-made, it's visual, it's really nice. You're not boring people with that.
Mm.
So they're definitely, I think, I imagine that meeting, those meetings that they had, they were thinking that the whole time, like, what's got longevity? What's going to be good? We're not making one film every 4 years now. We're making a franchise that's going to make billions.
Mm.
Villeneuve is probably, and Nolan, probably are the ones where you could go, I can see how this would spin off to multiple lucrative things.
Speaking of Nolan, do we think that's it?
Christopher Nolan, I think, got close to it, but I think was maybe spooked by the just not being able to have complete creative control. I think he's in a stage in his career where he's got a blank check to do whatever he wants. He's making a version of The Odyssey for a July IMAX release. I mean, only Christopher Nolan could make that sound interesting. To me, that sounds so boring.
The Odyssey is incredible.
Huh?
The Odyssey is incredible.
But, like, when have we last had, like, a Ray Harryhausen-style gods versus monsters, like, type movie where that's, like, what was that? They did, Clash of the Titans?
Clash of the Titans, yeah.
That, to me, is where this film is going. But because it's Christopher Nolan and because it's IMAX...
He likes the challenge of that, though, doesn't he? He likes taking on these projects that are almost unfilmable.
Yeah.
And making them incredible.
And I think a Christopher Nolan Bond film, we all know what that would look like.
But he's not a franchise guy, is he? You look at Villeneuve as a franchise guy.
Yeah.
Nolan will do one and go, I can't... Well, I suppose it's Batman.
So I said my initial reaction to Denis Villeneuve was disappointment that we would not get a lighter Bond film next. Within minutes... That changed to James Bond has got one of the greatest living filmmakers making the next James Bond film.
Yeah.
He is, without a doubt, unparalleled. He's up there in the top tier of filmmakers out there who can create a movie which has global appeal across four quadrants. And I teased that I had a theory about what they want with the next James Bond film. And the one thing that I know for a fact with Denis Villeneuve, like, obviously he's other franchises that he reinvigorated, Blade, Dune, these are things that were considered quite obtuse and like quite nerdy, but he's elevated them to another level where people are they're accessible, they're event movies. That's what James Bond needs. And in 2024, Denis Villeneuve was the most popular director on Letterboxd, right?
Mm.
That says a lot about the demographic of people who are engaging with Denis Villeneuve films.
Mm. Yeah.
That demographic is not our demographic.
Mm-hmm.
It's the 16 to 24-year-olds.
Yeah.
They are the ones that are... He's their director. He's not necessarily our director. Yeah, we love his movies, but he has that demographic and he's going to bring that demographic with him to the next Bond film.
Yeah.
And I think that is the one thing where I'm like, yeah, that makes, that's one of the, probably one of the things they considered as well. So I think, although we all want a Bond film that, like, you know, lives up to what has come before and ticks all the right boxes for us, and you've got older Bond fans who just want, like, you know, another Roger Moore film, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what Denis Villeneuve brings is a whole new audience demographic, and, like, his films are packed with people who lean to a younger audience as well, right? Is Timothy Chalamet's, and they are Jason Momoa. Yeah, he's got some older actors in there as well who, you know, Charlotte Rampling and Josh Brolin, who sort of lean a bit older, but he knows that audience. He taps into that, and there's a fan base for it.
Yeah.
So people who say, oh, he makes like arcane, like sci-fi movies. No, he makes films that people want to see. Yeah.
And Edgar Wright's not going to do that for the younger audience, is he?
I'm sorry, but Edgar Wright is a spent force, I would say. I mean, he hasn't made a great movie.
No, no. Well, yeah, we could talk about that in the New Year episode, but yeah, you look at Edgar Wright, he was very good at certain thing. That thing was done a long time ago.
Yeah.
Whereas Villeneuve is, and I think the thing about Villeneuve is,
look, no, don't get me wrong, Edgar Wright is incredibly talented, and I think he knows exactly what he's doing, but he's had a struggle of a career since the Cornettos. Yeah. I think Scott Pilgrim, yeah, has a cult following, but that was a flop.
Yes.
And since then, Baby Driver.
Yeah, yeah. And but with Villeneuve, you're looking at, I think, because he's so associated with Dune now, he does other stuff, and they can do different styles. Mm-hmm. That Dune is very, very specific style, which you wouldn't make loads of films out. So, you know, it probably, assuming that it's going to be like that, is probably wrong. It might be.
Exactly, yeah. And this is what I was saying. I don't know what his pitch was or what he wants to do with it. And I'm sure he is, I think the press statement said about how much of a fan he was of Dr. No and From Russia with Love. And I think he's going to make an incredible spy movie. We're going to have to wait a long time for it. But I think he can bring in that demographic of people who they'll see it because it's a Denis Villeneuve movie, not because it's a James Bond movie. Yep. And that's what they need. I think it's such a smart decision.
And the actors that he gets in it.
Yeah.
And also the source material. You know, it needs to be a good script.
Yes. Well, we'll talk about that in a second. Yeah. And I revisited some Denis Villeneuve films after this, and I watched Blade Runner 2049 and also Arrival.
Mm-hmm.
Blade Runner 2049, I can take or leave it. I think it's good, but it's not. But it's visually, it's incredible. Mm-hmm. Arrival, though, is just a masterpiece, an absolute masterpiece. The Dune films, they're not for me. They're too stately and but they're visually stunning, right? Yeah,
exactly.
So I think he's going to bring all of that to it. He's a master craftsman, and for that reason, I think we should be excited for what he does.
Yeah.
The next bit of news we got was that they hired someone to write the script, which, again, when we talked about it back in March, this was one of the things that was the key deciding factors. And the person they signed to write the script, Stephen Knight. Do you know much of Stephen Knight?
Peaky Blinders.
Peaky Blinders, I guess, is his big, his big thing, yeah.
Mm.
Any thoughts on that?
Well, again, Peaky Blinders is very British.
Very British, very character-driven.
Yeah.
So, which is a good sign for a first film in a series that you're focusing on characters.
Yeah.
As long as they're not caricatures.
And there's a clear identity. And, you know, that's what Bond requires.
Mm. Yeah.
Especially when you're rebooting a franchise.
It'd be nice if they get him on and he stays on and he's the one who finishes it and it's all, you know, in that world.
I don't think that's likely to happen at all, because I don't think in the history of Bond, the person that signed on to write the initial script has been the person that seen it right through to the end. Am I wrong?
Yeah, but there's probably a couple, but
I think every single film, Richard Maybaum at the start, he had other people came in rewrites.
Yeah.
As you progressed, it became like different writers.
But they probably don't want to, that's the Bond work, wasn't it? That's how that whole...
But I think he'll come in and he'll write a script, and I, hand on heart, I'm not hugely familiar with Stephen Knight's stuff. Mm. I haven't never got on board with Peaky Blinders. It's not for me. I watched an episode of SAS Rogue Heroes, which he also wrote.
Right.
He can write British, he can write action. I think what would be interesting is what the next stage is. He'll set the template for what they want from Bond, and then someone else will come in and finish it off.
Do you think they've chucked away the guide that they had? You know, the
Bible.
The Bible.
And that's gone now.
John Cork's Bible, yeah. I think they'll have a new one. I would be really surprised
start if they didn't a new have one, something. Yeah,
yeah. Of what Bond is in 2025, 2026, whatever. But I think, yeah, I'm not hugely familiar with Stephen Knight and his stuff.
No.
But the way his stuff is produced, it's often set in the past, and it often uses modern pop music to like for scenes and stuff. I don't really like that style.
Yeah.
So my gut instinct is that they've hired him to get the groundwork done, and then they'll bring someone else. If Phoebe Waller-Bridge, maybe she'll come back in and do a polish, or Purves and Wade might pop back in if they really struggle. But it's a really tough job.
Yeah. And is it going to be contemporary?
Yeah, I would say that's...
Because they've got a writer in who is
most
writes in the past.
Writes in the past.
He wrote that Tom Hardy film, Locked. Did you ever see that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was
set in a car.
Yeah, I really liked that.
That was one of the first things I remember reading that he'd done and seeing it. And that was a really interesting concept.
It's a tough one, isn't it? Because if you're basing it on, you know, accessibility for younger audiences, what are they going to be most receptive to? A modern, a contemporary one, or an old one?
Because Peaky Blinders is massive.
Yeah. So it might.
And global.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that's massive in the US.
There's definitely an angle of producing something that is old in style. It's got a little bit more of a pull than a modern day, like, oh, another spy thing, is it?
People are jaded by contemporary things.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's interesting.
And I think there's a big opportunity.
Visually, old style things are much more interesting these days, aren't they?
Yeah.
Downton Abbey.
Take Bond back.
The final farewell, whatever it's called.
The grand finale.
The grand finale.
Grand finale, which I'm sure we'll talk about in our New Year episode where we talk about the best movies of the year.
It's not on my list, actually. Good, I'm glad we brought that up.
So Stephen Knight's interesting. So I guess now we're in the stage where they're going to be writing the script. Stephen Knight's been writing the script. I'm sure he's probably delivered one by now if he's been working on it since July.
Yeah.
I think the next thing we'll hear is probably more screenwriters coming on to polish it. I think we won't really hear anything more concrete about who's going to be in it until much closer to the release of June, which I think is Christmas 2026.
Yeah.
Denis Villeneuve, they won't, I mean, you'll know better than me, but like he won't be able to dedicate much time to it while he's in production on a movie, will he?
No.
One of the biggest movies of all time. No, probably not.
It's going to be difficult, and equally going to be difficult. I know David Heyman will have, he's not going to be as hands-on, but I mean, he still needs to dedicate some time to it. So people are busy, you know, they need to free up their calendar before they can start working properly on something as big as this.
Yeah, and we'll talk in our New Year's episode about like what we want from the film and who might play it. Like the big Bond question, right? We can talk about that in our next episode. I just wanted to, I put out a thing on our Instagram ahead of this with some questions from our listeners. So I just wanted to rattle through some of these before we wrap up this episode. Neela Ersc, I don't know what that is, but he said, if you could take a Bond and put them in another Bond's film, which would it be and why? And I guess he's talking about maybe like the actor that plays Bond and put in, but you wouldn't want two Bonds in a film, would you?
Roger Moore, No Time to Die.
Two Roger Moores in No Time to Die.
Well, only one, but two would be good.
No Time to Die, but every character's playing.
Make
it happen.
Yeah.
Is there any... I mean, the classic one I think we all used to talk about
Connery in
On a Majesty's Secret Service.
Yes.
Or Lazenby in Die Another Day. Not Die Another Day, Diamonds Are Forever.
Lazenby in Die Another Day would be incredible.
That would be, yeah.
I just want to see Roger Moore in all of them.
Yeah, but, I mean, AI is going to happen, right?
I think that we'll get to that point where you can just pick your Bond.
Yeah.
But I think Brosnan in Casino Royale, just to see how that would have looked.
Yeah, I mean, that's
you'd
great.
Just put Brosnan in any film, wouldn't you? Mary Poppins.
I'd like to see Never Say Never Again Connery in Die Another Day.
I'd like to
see that.
Yeah. Really jaded Connery in Die Another Day.
In the dungarees. So that's a great question. Got another one here from, I mean, this is we might struggle with this one, but this is from Alpha Signal 7. He said, is there a Chart song that you would think would make a great Bond theme, but obviously wasn't?
Chart?
I know.
I haven't seen the Chart since 1997.
I mean, that's not been done by the artist? Because I mean, there's a few Adele songs that you could bring in. I mean, Amy Winehouse.
Yeah.
There's people who fit that. Michael Bublé, he's divisive. But a lot of it...
Not the Christmas album.
Right, right.
We'll talk about it in the next episode, but I actually did think that like Doja Cat would be sort of a good... She's got like that... She just sort of does an impression of... what's her face?
Mini Driver.
Goldfinger.
Shirley Bassey.
She does a good impression of that, but I think somebody like that, because you still... I think you've always got to have an element of that sort of Adele style. It's got to have a big, strong voice.
Yeah,
I think there's a few artists who've made songs which could fit easily into a Bond film. I don't know specifically, but like I'm thinking like Arctic Monkeys, Last Shadow Puppets. I think they've made some big sounding film songs.
A return to the bands would be good. Yeah, we've not seen that for a
Muse again. Have made songs that would fit that. But no, that's a great question, and thanks for sending that in, Alpha Signal 7. Alex, I'll talk about that one next time. Edward JC75 said, what are your thoughts on Bond merchandise? Why is it so expensive? And great to see you back.
Because of the audience. That will change.
People will buy it and have the money to buy it. Like you said.
Nowadays, the Bond merchandise is like on the 007 store. It's for people our age and older, who've got disposable income and they really, really love Bond and they'll spend that money. But when the new film comes out, I think merchandise will change radically. We might go back to a time of like, you know, cheap things that kids can buy. And
like a Bond Labubu.
I beg your pardon?
I don't even know what a Labubu is. But
right.
They're those horrible, ugly dolls.
I'm thinking more like Bond merchandise in terms of the old style of Bond merchandise where you got like, you know,
the board games
and things like that, where it's actually tailored towards younger people just with not a lot of disposable income.
Listen, I think there's a Bond level of Bond merchandise to suit every sort of pocket. I think one piece of merchandise I think we can all agree on is those socks that they make.
I'm going to order a load more for Christmas. Yeah.
They are so good.
Yeah. London Sock Exchange.
London Sock Exchange, there you go. Yeah, they make great.
The parachute ones.
Yeah.
I've got that on now.
Have you?
Have you really?
Parachute one. No, I've got the Golden Eye.
Oh, yes.
It is the Paris something.
Okay. One more message just from Instagram. Jack Hazard said, just finished the pod and thank you guys for making the perfect Bond fanboy content. Love it. So that's a very nice message. Talking of Bond merchandise, though, we've got some Christmas presents. I've got some Christmas presents.
Mine's not Bond.
Okay. Well, all right. So should we do this now or?
I mean,
or in the new year?
Yours is actually Bond, so you can do it. Mine's right. Oh no, I've got one Bond thing in here.
All right, this is a little present for.
Let's get some ASMR. ASMR.
Yeah. Get it. Now I've just a little caveat. These weren't quite. They're not quite presented in the way I hope to present them.
Oh!
I hold it up to the light, Wheatley.
Oh, well, that is lovely.
That's
very good. It is that's from New York, Live and Let Die.
Yes.
Roger Moore. That's outside the voodoo place.
What are you looking at? Explain it to the listeners.
It's a framed 5 cells of the film.
Yeah. Mounted on what looks like...
The worst possible mounting
A bit
possible.
Of glass from your kitchen door.
Yes, yeah. So I think the frames that aren't doing it justice, but what you've got, Brendan, is 5 frames from Russia with Love.
From
an original printer from Russia with
That's
Love.
Really, really That's really, really good.
Yours are from Live and Let Die. I got myself one.
Very nice. Yeah.
But the frames aren't quite right because the glass is ridged, so you kind of have to see it. If you can find the frame that's just perspex,
That's really good. So that's one of the die outside the voodoo thing.
Where I took that picture and sent you.
Yeah, very good.
And I've been on a train.
You've been on
a train.
It's your favourite Bond film.
Well, you've definitely put more thought into it than I have.
So yours is from, from Rush With Love, where Red Grant
on the train.
Yeah, so you like those?
Very well done. Thank you very much. Yeah,
they're from an eBay seller, so if you're interested, they're very reasonably priced.
Is your non-Bond.
Right, so Wheatley, you bought me something wrapped up in butcher's paper.
Yeah, as I always do.
It's rationing.
pretty close.
Right, a bit of an ASMR for you. Oh, I think I can see a Jurassic Park logo. Oh, hello. What have you got this? What is this? James Bond Top Trumps, every assignment. Love that. Oh, and a book on Jurassic Park, the original Topps trading cards. Look at that. That's a great present. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Wow. That's fantastic.
You know, I love Jurassic Park. It's my favourite movie of all time.
It also so smells good.
Top Trumps.
Thought we could maybe play Top Trumps in a bit.
This is absolutely nothing to do with Bond.
And I feel like the international audience are going, what?
Everyone's gone off now. Why are we listening to them over a present?
Yes.
It is. It's a Viz book. What? Describe Viz to an American listener.
It's like Mad. A bit.
It's a bit like Mad. It's a satirical comic book for adults in the UK.
Yeah, rude.
Very rude.
Very rude.
Very base humour. But the Profanosaurus...
Is a book of swear words.
It's like a dictionary, but for rude words.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is one of the funniest books I've ever read. Mm. So this is the latest edition, is it?
I can't believe how thick it is.
Yeah, yeah.
So this started off in the 90s. As like
I've got one from... about 2001, and it is like a third of the size of that.
And so. It's now 750 pages.
There we go.
Right,
there
check if there's a James Bond entry.
Right, that's what I'm just about to look. Blofeld.
Blofeld. Okay, what is Blofeld?
Can you read it on
Can we read this? Okay. Blofeld, noun, a biddy fiddler, mothball diver, tomb raider, OA paedophile. We can't say.
That's very
good. This is named after the erstwhile James Bond villain in honour of his habit of stroking a white pussy.
That's very good.
Well, what a way to end this Christmas special. Wow. I mean, this is the greatest present because it just... Honestly, I've read a...
Well, I spent a long time looking at Paddington stuff and then I thought, yeah, that's just... You've probably got it all already.
Well, that's been our Christmas special. I hope you've enjoyed rejoining us on the James Bond A to Z Christmas special for another podcast. Remember that from last year? Yeah.
We hated it.
Yeah, so I hope you've all had a wonderful Christmas. Let us know what Christmas presents you got, if they were James Bond related.
Yeah, I don't want to know all of if it's not that. Yeah.
No, and our followers on Instagram, James Bond A to Z, and that's our only active social media account still going. So, I wish everyone a happy Christmas. Great to do this again, guys. And please don't forget to rejoin us for our New Year's special, which we'll release on New Year's Day.
See you later.
Ciao.
Don't you think it's awful?
I'm Irish. I've had a gutful of that bollocks since I was a kid.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.